Welcome to Mission Critical with Lance Chung, the show where we explore the ideas, strategies, and people shaping the future. For the next four episodes, I'm so excited to be bringing you inside the 2025 Glory Sports Summit, where we brought together Canada's top sports leaders to tackle the biggest questions in the game. From the 2026 FIFA World Cup to the rise of women's sports and more, these are the conversations at the intersection of sport, culture, and impact. Enjoy.
As a co-founder of Project 8 and the visionary behind the Northern Super League, Diana is quite literally building the future of women's professional soccer in Canada from the ground up. Alongside her is Anastasia Busis, an Olympian in long track speed skating and one of the most respected voices in Canadian sports media today. You've seen her on CBC Sports, you've heard her and felt her impact far beyond the broadcast booth. But Anastasia's influence goes deeper than sport. In the lead up to the 2014 Sochi Olympics, Anastasia came out publicly in opposition to Russia's anti-LGBTQ plus laws, becoming the only out athlete from North America to compete at those games. It was a bold, deeply personal act of protest that continues to ripple across sport and society to this day. Together, they've carved out a life that is both deeply public and deeply intentional, advocating for inclusion, pushing the boundaries of what's possible in Canadian sport, and supporting one another every step of the way. Our conversation is part of a special live taping of our podcast, Mission Critical, where we dig into what it means to live with purpose, and also what it takes to lead when the path hasn't yet been paved. So please give a warm round of applause and warm welcome to Diana and Anastasia. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to have this chat, and it's been such a pleasure chatting with you in the green room and getting to know you in our pre-calls. How are you, first of all, how are you feeling today?
We're loving it here. Thank you so much to Glory Sports, and I hope you all folks are having the best time ever. We're just going to talk about being a couple, I guess. I don't know, a couple, that's a weird label, but...
Yeah, this is our first couple podcast together interview, so thanks for sharing us for this intimate moment of this crowd of people. Should we get...
Love that. Well, my first question is for both of you. You know, you've both had extraordinary careers that have placed you in national and global spotlights. When the noise quiets, when you're at home together... And it's just the two of you. How do you define yourselves beyond the role you play publicly? What's the human side between the interaction between you two?
Diana reminds me how good she was at soccer all the time.
Yeah.
She's like, don't you know who I am? Come on. oh my gosh. Sport has been just so integral in our identity that like I don't even know if we talk about it that much.
Yeah, I think the both our jobs, obviously, and a lot of people here, like we've been chasing dreams for the last 3.5 years, and that is a lot and all-consuming. And sport doesn't turn off, as many of you know too. So it's a 24/7 thing. So we're trying to get better at carving out the space outside of that and not having that be our whole identity. We also have a cat, so then I guess we're also cat ladies. Yeah. Is also part of our identity, so that fills it. I don't know if that helps.
I love that. Diana, you've had, you know, a front row seat to the growth of Canadian women's soccer as a player, a leader, and now as a founder. How did it feel to realize that, you know, if this doesn't, you know, if this league was ever going to happen, it would have to be you who built it?
It's surreal. Still, I think, when I was a kid, Adiro talked about it, he didn't have a dream of playing professional soccer. Obviously, as a kid growing up, I didn't have a dream of playing professional women's soccer for the national team. You didn't see it on TV, you didn't know it was an option. And I certainly did not grow up thinking I was going to help build a women's professional soccer league, but it was one of those things where I'd retired from sport. I knew I wanted to stay involved in whatever was going to happen in this landscape. It seemed obvious that women's professional soccer was going to start at some point. We were the only team in the last Women's World Cup out of 32 countries, along with Haiti, that didn't have a league yet. It seemed inevitable. I wanted to be a part of that. Went back to school for 2 years to prepare myself for that. Got my MBA, did a program through UEFA. And realized through that work, as I was doing all my individual, you know, reports on the feasibility of women's professional soccer in Canada, that no one was working on anything. And it was always, we're going to start in 2 years. We're going to start in 2 years. And that is what I'd been hearing since 2007. So it didn't seem like that was going to change anytime soon. And it was really it was the idea that I might regret not trying to do it, and the league either, you know, wouldn't get started, and you could see women's professional sport growing so quickly. It was obvious we needed to start to build now, or the ship would sail. It would be too expensive to get in the market. And it was that, I think it was that threat and feeling of, I might regret this if I don't do it. That was one of the main drivers to do it, because obviously it was a big project to take on too, and obviously there's been a lot of time and energy and collective stress and gray hairs over the last 3.5 years.
Yeah, no small feat for sure. In the process of building the Northern Super League, what emotional or personal kind of sacrifices did you have to make that most people wouldn't see from the outside? Like, what do people not see from the outside in?
The sleepless nights, like, honestly, there's been so many nights where we've both woken up at 3:30 in the morning and you're just staring at the ceiling thinking, is this gonna work? And for so long, I think, and we've kind of laughed about this, there was a little bit of a delusion that needed to exist in our household for a few years, where it was just like anything negative we couldn't deal with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have a lot of opinions and a lot of hot takes on women's sports. And so to kind of balance any negativity or any unsolicited, and there were some unsolicited good ideas and whatnot, but just to really keep like foot to gas, it's been difficult, you know? Diana, I think, had just such a rock solid vision, and I remember when she came up with the idea of starting Project 8, which then turned into the Northern Super League, so many athletes, like teammates of yours, because she had created the Players Association for the Canadian Soccer Association back in the day, had very much confirmed, like, it's got to be D. And I never played soccer. That was well before my time, even knowing D. So I just didn't quite understand, like, the impact or the respect she had from her colleagues and peers. And it has been so beautiful to see that grow and, you know, obviously to just get a front row ticket to your brilliance. But there's a lot of stress every single day, all day. And yeah, it's been that way for a few years. So, yes, we are looking maybe for a Clairol sponsorship.
Yes.
We're going great.
Yes. We are looking for any brand. Open,
spend
open
money.
It's an open category for us personally. Is a hair.
Is this true though that like when you're creating something that
Sharon has,
it is true that when you're creating something that doesn't exist out there, or when you're trying to solve a problem, even, you know, as entrepreneurs, you do have to be slightly DeLulu to just kind of block out 100%. All the things going around you and just have that singular focus in building, because there's a lot of naysayers or challenges that otherwise would be a big deterrent from taking something like that on.
Yeah, 100%. I think, and you know, I was lucky in this project, and obviously it was something, you know, I was personally passionate about. I mean, greatest strength, greatest weakness, probably too close to it. Any entrepreneur though, like, you're too close to it and it's why it happens, but it's also your greatest flaw. But it was just, you know, timing is everything, and this all happened at a time where like this, it could happen and it was going to happen. Like, there was, the time was now, and if we weren't going to do it now, it wasn't going to happen. And in a market where, again, women's professional soccer coming out of COVID, women's professional sport was booming. It was being treated as a business for the first time in history. We were shifting away from event-based into professional. We finally had data. Like, there was no women's sports data before 2019. We could bring to any investors, any sponsors to tell you why it was a good investment. Now there was, so we can make the business case. And in Canada, like, third largest player pool in the world, literally produce some of the best players in the world. Canadians engage in sport in a world-leading way with all sport, including women's sport. We put our girls in sport at some of the highest rates in the world. We've been watching women's soccer since 2012, if not sooner. Like, all these things are world-leading. So it was, yeah, you had to live in that delusion, but it was a vision, like, it was a vision, obviously, we all believed in and could get buy-in with so many Canadians, and you just had to be really, really clear on, that's the vision, and it's possible, and it's just a matter of time till we get there. But it was a journey, so much uncertainty for
so much
for
uncertainty,
years.
But you also got to give a, like, we have to give a huge shout-out to Jaina Hefford and the PWHL, everyone at the Tempo, like, every single person that's working in women's sports right now is so supportive and just how inspiring it is to see you pick up the phone and then people answer the call. Like, it's unbelievable. We're so lucky. We're very tired again to bring up the Clairol, but we're so lucky. Like, it does feel like it's a team effort, regardless if it's hockey, soccer, basketball, like whatever it may be.
Yeah, and that's one of the people ask, like, what's the difference between men and women's sports? And there's differences across the whole thing, across different sports. But one of them for sure is because women's sport is in this place where it's so new, like, national teams, women's national teams only started in like the 80s or 90s. Like, that's how new this is. Mm-hmm. Now women's professional soccer era, we're in like year two in Canada. Like, this thing's just getting started. It's going to go in the next 100 years. And because of that, like, we care about making sure that this game is growing and in a better place for the next generation. And that is across sports. So I can pick up the call to anyone, you know, Teresa Reschner team, Jane Enner team, Leah McNabb used to be at WNBA Canada. Like, I can call anyone in women's sports and be like, I need this piece of information. They'll be like, no problem. It's an incredible community to be a part of.
It is actually so great to hear, because this and see this collaborative spirit. We were interviewing Brenda from AFC Toronto in our studio the other day, and she was also saying, like, there is this groundswell across the board, across different leagues and sports. There is the spirit of knowledge sharing, resource sharing, that has been so great, because together, you know, high tides lift all boats. And this is definitely, seems like a community that is proving to do so.
It is, and I think it's timely too. Like, I think I think we need more of that across all of sport and all of Canada. Like, we're in this crazy time we're in with everything going on. You know, we've got this elbows up mentality, and there's something about that. We have one of the best, again, sport markets in the world. It's like 2 out of 3 Canadians follow women's sports already. I think it's 75% of general population in Canada follows sports. Like, that's unbelievable. So there's, you know, how do we make sure this is continually to be, sport is, you know, a thriving industry in our country. Sport is an important part of our culture in this country. How do we keep working on those things? Because obviously it's so important for kids and confidence and leadership and all these things, but also, you know, at our level too, jobs and industry growth and all these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anastasia, so, you know, as I mentioned, in 2013, ahead of the Sochi Olympics, you probably came out in protest of Russia's anti-LGBTQ+ laws, and you were the only out North American athlete at the time. That was a hugely bold move. What emboldened you to speak up, and did it cost you anything? What gave you that energy to do so?
I would regret for the rest of my life if I did not say something, because I knew, and this was just over 10 years ago, so the landscape has changed so significantly. I'm so grateful for that. But it was really, really, really difficult. Like, I really struggled with my mental health, anxiety, depression, very much had thoughts of suicide ideation, and I just thought, I cannot be in this position where I can hopefully help make someone feel a little less alone or a little less anxious. And if I can do that, it's way more impactful than anything I could do, you know, skating around in a circle. I mean it, like, for real, right? Like, I wasn't going to win a gold medal. Like, so at least I'm going to go there and know I'm going there 100% as myself and living my values. And it's interesting. Like, being a closeted lesbian in speed skating, where there was no one else at that point in time, I just felt so incredibly alone. And we've kind of talked about this. Obviously, women's soccer is different, being in a team sport and a little bit more, I would say, accepting and open and whatnot. But I'm so grateful just to see the progress that has come from it. I can't say that it's because of me, but I'm so grateful if I've been even a little player in some of the progress we've seen. It's been the gift that's kept on giving, and I think it's why I'm sitting here right now, to be honest.
You know, in your role today, you've interviewed and covered some of the biggest stories in Canadian sports. What stories still feel undertold to you from your perspective, especially when it comes to queer representation or women in sport, or just diversity in sport in general? What do you feel like are the stories that aren't being told enough of today?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. First and foremost, trans athletes, that would be my immediate answer. Mm-hmm. But what I am excited about, you know, that we've seen, kind of usher in and whatnot, is just how many diverse stories people actually want to spend money on and listen to and engage with. And we are seeing that, I think, with women's sports and the humanization of these athletes and the intersections between culture and sport, fashion, pop culture, whatever it may be. I think we're just seeing an exploding economy, and that is the word to use, because there's a ton of money to be made, to be blunt.
Yeah.
But we're just recognizing that we have been, you know, operating in a system, and I love traditional sports. I love men's sports. This is not me trying to be, you know, anything political. I'm just trying to say we've only thought of sports from one lens for so long that now we're like, okay, there's so many things. It's an all-you-can-eat smorgasbord. Like, there's something for everyone. And yeah, that's such a beautiful thing, because sports should be a human right. Like, it gives us the values that we know turn people into leaders. And you learn those values not at the Olympic or Paralympic level. You learn them losing grade 8 badminton city championships. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm just so grateful that we are now all kind of coming to realize that a sports story doesn't have to look or sound a certain way. And
yeah,
there's a real opportunity there.
I think on the women's sports side too, like, it feels, I think there's the feeling the needle's moved. Like, before the P-Dub started, before we started, the stat out there that was floating around was out of all sport coverage, 4% was women's sport coverage. The stats now are somewhere between 5% and 15%. So if we're on the low end of that, we've moved the needle 1%. So there's still a question of how are we making the media? How are we telling the stories? Because women's athletes all have incredible stories because we've been living these like crazy lives forever. But who's telling the stories? And in Canada, we have, you know, our traditional sport media. I think we all know the media industry in Canada is struggling right now. There's lots of challenges there. So it's not like people are going to be hiring and adding more capacity to cover these stories. So who's covering them? I think a lot of the onus is then falling on the leagues, on women's sport leagues themselves, to cover their own stories in a way that's not asked of men's sport, which takes more resources. So where is it coming from? Or is it sponsors? Can sponsors step in and tell these athlete stories? The Gist helps fill that role, but I would say there's still a massive gap there in storytelling. And I think, like, logistically and resources wise, how are we actually getting those stories told? And I think there's still a lot of figuring that out.
Yeah, and brands spend your money on sports. Anastasia, what's something about Diana that most people don't know but should? And also vice versa for Diana and Anastasia.
I was gonna say, isn't this supposed to be about us? this is our relationship. We just end up talking about soccer, sorry. D is 10 times smarter than she is athletic.
Boo.
Which is saying something. No, she's so annoyingly athletic. My God. Like, when you're a kid, and you know what I mean? You're like 15, 16, and a coach tells you something to do. Like, stop doing that with your left hand. You can change that when you're 16 years old. You can't change that when you're 36. But she still had that
ability.
Thank
you for calling me 36.
I know, she's 41 now, sorry. But right before she retired, like, I had the ability to work with I was helping her rehab. And her ability to change her movement patterns is like 1% of 1%, 1%. So I would say smarter than athletic, but also quite athletic. You already knew that though, didn't you, I guess? What else? She's not very good at directions. So
I was gonna say you're good at,
like,
yeah,
real bad. Like, she'll say, I think we should go left, and it's always right. Yeah. You know? So that, yeah, other than that, I just love absolutely everything about her.
Mm.
And we met 6 years ago, and we're so lucky. Like, it's just, we met the year before the pandemic. So thank God we moved in together for the pandemic, and we made it through that. So it's been smooth sailing ever since.
That is the test, yes.
Yeah.
Dana, what about Anastasia?
I was gonna say the direction thing. Like, sorry. Great. If we're in an amazing race team, Anastasia in charge of telling us which way to go. I think, like, obviously you see her as sports host and Olympian, but 100% like drama nerd at heart. Very creative. She can draw a really mean portrait of you in only 60
Keyword
seconds.
Mean.
What else? You're really good at reaching the things off of the highest shelves for me.
That's true.
Everyone, yeah. Every couple needs someone that's
that one.
Yeah. Top shelf.
But also just like biggest heart and empath, and is always very aware of everyone mm-hmm. in the room, and that is something I try and learn from all the time.
Have there been moments where, you know, because both of your careers are so, you know, you're operating at the highest level, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. Have there been moments where your careers have tested your relationship or the dynamic between you both? And if so, how did you move through them?
Well, yeah, I mean, we met 6 years ago, so we went through the pandemic together, and then the last 3 years have been the most stressful.
Building a sports league
three
is
years
hard.
Of our lives, for sure.
It's really hard. Yeah.
I think probably last December would have been, because like end of last year, we only had 4 teams ready to go.
Yeah.
For the Northern Super League.
Well, I feel like I'm the mother of a goalie. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have agency of what happens.
Yeah.
I just...
The soccer people laughed at that.
Sorry.
Okay,
like,
thank you.
Like, I just have to watch, you know, and, like, see her hopefully save kicks or let some in. But, like, it's very difficult to, like, be that close and have no agency over actually what's going on. I mean, hopefully I help you. But it's been, yeah, difficult. Like, before they kicked off, they only had 4 teams, to your point, about 8, however many months, I don't know. But it was very, very stressful. You should have complete that anecdote because I gave them like 2 stats. Sorry.
No. Yeah, it was, just like so much uncertainty. And I think too, when we went into this project, like it was with the awareness that this was going to be like an all consuming thing for a few years. But I think it was, we are not lucky enough to have children yet, hopefully someday. But I've compared it so far to giving childbirth. Like you don't know or you don't want to know how hard it is until you do it.
Yes.
So I think we've only been able to do this because we didn't know how hard it was going to be, and we are only going through this particular thing once, but lots of uncertainty, like knowing it's on, as any entrepreneur, like you know it's on you and your team to make it happen, and if you guys don't make it happen, no one will, and it was very public and very big and all these things, and it took a disproportionate amount of energy and like headspace, emotional, everything of our lives, not just our relationship, but our lives for a few years, and that was a lot and definitely got draining at times. And it still does. Like she hosted the Olympic Games last summer. She's going to host the Olympic Games in this winter. And I would still say soccer still comes up too much in the household. Because yeah, now we kicked off, but obviously now we have to get it to here.
It's like this.
So it goes and goes.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. You both each carried the weight of representation in different ways, obviously not just as women in sport, but as queer women in a space that, isn't always the most welcoming and safe space. What is kind of the emotional toll of being seen, or do you feel like there's an emotional toll of being seen as a symbol when you're also still might be personally figuring things out on your own as well?
Absolutely. I ask myself that question every day. Am I doing enough? I think we all ask ourselves that. And I don't know. Like, I still feel like we're not really back into reality after the pandemic. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel... Maybe I'm on TikTok too much. I'm like, we are definitely on an alternative timeline because it still kind of feels like a dream. And so right now...
We're on Biff's
timeline from Back to the Future. No, that's what I heard. Like... I absolutely. I ask myself that every day. What can I be doing more? And especially with the persecution of trans athletes, we can all be doing more. So that's very heavy. And it can be overwhelming. But I also think that asking yourself that question hopefully brings beauty and brings a little bit of a softer side of yourself and life to everything that we're experiencing in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah. What does inclusivity for both of you look like from a sports infrastructure standpoint, not just as a value, but really just as, through lived experiences and how we can create a more equal playing field, so to speak?
I think that's a great question, and we definitely don't have all the answers. I would say in women's sport, exception of WNBA, we're still pretty white, like a couple white ladies up here, so definitely don't have all the answers. And I think the soccer panel touched on it too, we're a pay-to-play system in Canada when it comes to sport, and that is a huge barrier to a lot of families in putting in sports, so I think there's work to be, I don't know the answer to changing the pay-to-play system. Sharon, when you're done doing the World Cup, maybe you could fix that for everyone.
Thanks. You and Nadia have so much time.
Yeah, you can do that after. There's something there. And Anastasia brought it up. Trans athletes in sport, I think there's still work to be done there. There's such fear in that area, but that fear just results in this backlash on a very small minority of people that ends up harming them further when trans athletes are not a threat to women's professional sport in any way. And I think women's sport, because we have come from this place where we weren't, you know, women's soccer was illegal in different countries. Like, we've come from a place where we weren't allowed to participate either, not too long ago, where I think there's that understanding that we have to do more work to make sure others are welcome too. So I think there's lots to do there. Women's pro sport, obviously, we're all startups, we're all building. So I think we're gonna have more capacity to impact those things too as we get older.
Yeah.
Last question here before we open things up to the audience. You know, throughout today's summit, there's a theme of legacy as individuals, as institutions, as a country. What kind of legacy do you each want to leave behind, not just in sport, but just as individuals?
That you got to choose love. Mm-hmm. Like, we're here to love, not judge. And I know that gets lost because we all like to win the game, and I hate losing. I really do. But I think we are so lucky to be working in sport, and we're so lucky to be Canadian. Legacy, I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I was born in 1989. Like, I am genuinely the product of those Winter Olympics, and that city would look nothing the way it does today if we didn't host in 88. So I'm excited to see what FIFA brings this country and the continent. But yeah, if it all goes away tomorrow, I just hope I hope I spread love. That's ultimately it. Dee?
Here's a fun fact about Anastasia. She doesn't mind losing if it's like the stuff that doesn't matter, like board games or
yeah,
like a frisbee game.
She'll
be like, whatever. But as soon as it actually matters or she cares, then yeah, she's a racer. She's going to beat you. Legacy. I think, okay, I mean, obviously with this league, leaving a big legacy there, I think I want to not be doing this still in, you know, however many years. Again, it's been a heavy lift to do this. And I think legacy, in addition to what the league is building, or a big part of it, I guess, is having that next wave of women leaders come through that are taking on the lift, and then taking however far we got this thing, they're then picking that up and they're able to get it to the next level, because that's how progress happens.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for giving us a peek into your lives, but also just the work that you're doing, and it is truly creating, opening doors for so many people. So please, a round of applause for Diana Anastasia. We're going to open up for any questions. Yes, first one right here.
I think one of the things where, like, early in our relationship, where we're like, oh no, this is going to work, was we were playing a game of Can Jam at Trinity Bellwoods or something with a couple friends, and the two friends we were playing with were like getting mad wasn't going well. And we were like, yeah,
like, come on, yeah. It's 30 degrees. Oh, yeah, no. I was like, I think I might marry you that day.
Yeah. Yeah. So for, like, yeah, games and things like that, and, like, not competitive. So, no, I think we're more competitive against other people than
Only child, so I'm like, I'll play solitaire over here. Yeah, I'm not good. I'm sorry.
Sports management and sports.
Oh, great question. Yes, absolutely. And I absolutely invested in myself, went back to the Smith School of Business, and did my MBA there. I was able to get into that program because there's a partnership between the Canadian Olympic Committee and a program they have called Game Plan, where they have a partnership with the Smith School of Business, where athletes, Olympic athletes, can get certificates or MBAs for free. So this was a $100,000 program that I got in for free because I was not affording this tuition on my women's soccer salary at the time. So shout out that was even available to me as an Olympic athlete. That was my only way through. I would say here in Canada, we obviously have incredible universities. We have an incredible university system as a baseline. One of the outcomes we want to see with the Northern Super League is previously the pathway for Canadian women's soccer players has 99% of us after high school have gone down through the NCAA system, and we play in NCAA and American universities, which, you know, they're good schools or not, and then we go play around the world. One of the things we want to see is we keep more Canadians in Canada and going to Canadian universities. And I think there's lots of opportunities for Canadian universities to expand their sport management programs. I know TMU's got some stuff. Guelph, the Lang School of Business, has some sport programs. I think it's a huge growth area, which a lot of universities could lean into across sport management, sport media, whatever is sport science. You now in Canada have 6 NSL clubs. You know, it's going to be 7, it's going to be 8. You've got the PWHL expanding. You've got Toronto Tempo here. So you've got lots of women's professional sport teams that I'm sure would love to partner in different capacities with things. So I think lean into it and create more and more programs, because I think there's going to be a more and more demand. I think one of the problems I'm pointing to Teresa Resch back there with Toronto Temple. One of the problems we've had since we started is we have too many people reaching out to us for jobs. So there's a massive demand for people that want to work in women's pro sport that's going to keep rising. So I think there's going to be a demand at the education level too for programs.
Great. Okay, I think we have time for one more question if there's anyone in the audience. Oh, yes, you are there.
Yeah, you should answer this one too. I think for me, the thing that comes to mind is what you said a bit earlier, like stay a bit delusional, but only in the sense where like you know yourself better than everyone, and you know what you want to do, you know where you're going, you know what you can do. And I think anyone doing anything right now, you're going to get more no's than you get yeses. Even right now with the Northern Super League, and you know we exist and everything's going great, we still get more no's than we get yeses for sure, and that's never going to go anywhere. But you know, and no's doesn't mean that they're right. It means that that wasn't the right person or the right path, and you just got to keep going until you find the one that's right for you.
Yeah, I would just reiterate, it's so hard at times to believe in yourself. It's so hard to be vulnerable when you're genuinely in a vulnerable position. But I basically made Vancouver 2010 off of the provincial team, and a whole bunch of people didn't think I would ever do that. So you know yourself, you know what you have to give, you know your limits. You just gotta quiet the noise and listen to that small voice, because take control of your life. You know, you only get one. We don't get a dress rehearsal, and it's such a beautiful journey when you take the first step.
Yeah, and no athlete's pathway is the same. Like, each sport has these pathways. No one's all done the same thing. Like, in women's soccer, if you talk to 23 people on the team, they've all had different paths. We've had people make the national team when they were 27 years old. So there's a different path for everyone.
Great. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
Your time.